Welcome to the Ministry Collaborative Podcast,
a series of honest conversations about opportunities,
challenges,
and joy in ministry today.
These episodes are inspired by interactions with ministry leaders from across the country
as they explore possibilities,
learn from broad perspectives,
take risks,
and cultivate candid discussions
that generate disruptive creativity.
Hey friends, this is Adam Borneman, and today I'm with my friend Rob Dyer. Rob is the pastor at First United Presbyterian in Belleville, Illinois, and also does some coaching and consulting with ministry architects. Rob, thanks for being with us.
That's awesome to be here. Thanks, Adam.
You and I connected several months ago because you wrote a couple of articles. You know, I don't know what the relative benchmark is for viral, but in church world, one of your articles went sort of viral. And the title of it was, "They're Not Coming Back." And I read it and I said, oh, this is what our team has been talking about for like 2 years. And someone put it really well. And so I reached out and we clicked and had a lot more to talk about. And then you wrote another piece that was kind of a follow-up to that. So our team's been talking on our podcast recently about what's at stake and trying to ask really big questions about really what God is doing in the world and what's happening more broadly in our culture and the implications of that for ministry. So I wanted to have you on and talk a little bit about that. But first, could you tell us a little bit about the context that you're in and the ministry that you're doing?
Sure. I serve a medium-sized congregation in a suburb of St. Louis. And I also been pretty involved in my presbytery, and through ministry architects, I get to go out and serve around the nation and connect with other church leaders and churches. And so the context that I'm in right now is a weird mix of my own church, you know, and the ups and downs and challenges there. And then I dabble in all these other churches around the area, and I get this little privileged window into the inner workings of different pastors' minds as I do coaching with them, and they're struggling and celebrating and all that in between. And it's an interesting collection of experiences.
And Rob, I think you've said in recent months and over the past couple of years something that a lot of folks have been thinking, and that is they're not coming back. And I know that you said this sort of in the context of, particularly with young families, young adults, but say a little bit more about that whole notion and just to maybe summarize for folks kind of what your thinking is behind that sort of statement.
Sure. I think that the narratives that we've been telling ourselves about young adults coming back to church gives us the framework for understanding the narratives that we're telling ourselves about the pandemic. You know, when we talk about what's going on with the young adults in our churches, we used to say like, well, they'll come back when they get back from college. And then they didn't. And we said, well, when they get married, they'll come back to the church. And then they didn't. And we said, well, when they have kids and they'll want them to get baptized. And then they didn't. And then we said, well, when they get older and they want a youth group for their kids. And we just kept pushing it back and pushing it back. And they didn't come back just automatically. And so now we find ourselves in the pandemic, and we noticed that people took a break from church, either because their church went remote or went offline for a while. And as the church started up different creative ways of gathering, people weren't coming back. And they said, oh, well, they'll come back once we're in person. Oh, they'll come back once we stop wearing masks. Oh, they'll come back when we stop, you know, and they just kept creating the same type of pushing back the line, pushing back the line. And the truth is that a lot of people are not coming back because they've found that in taking the break, they don't need what we're offering.
And what is it that we're offering they don't need?
Well, the things that we offer as the church most often are, we got this awesome TED Talk that we do every week. You come in and you sit through some music that you would probably not listen to. You know, you wouldn't stream, you wouldn't tune your radio into, but you listen to that. And then we take you through a few rituals that feel vaguely familiar, that look like grandma, smell like grandma. And then there's a reading from a book that you pretend you know, but everyone just kind of relies on whatever we get on the Sunday service. And then you get this really great talk. And, oh, and by the way, if during the week you go into the hospital, you have a real big problem, there's this person at the church who will come visit you. And that's what we're offering. We're also offering a few social groups where you can get together in little groups with one another and hang out. And it has occasionally a really great kind of religious vibe to it, but people just found that they didn't need that. They found that in the course of this pandemic, what they needed really was space and a break and breathing room and peace and they're searching for answers to these existential questions that are invading their life now that they have had all this isolation and threat to their safety. And the church is just not offering the answers to those questions that are really on their minds at this time.
Yeah, and that's a great segue into the second piece you wrote, sort of a follow-up, The Room Where It Happens. And I think in this piece, you're trying to offer a little bit more of a constructive remedy to say, well, what is it that we offer then? If they're not coming back to, you know, you and I riffed a little bit on the phrase constituent services. If they're not coming back for that, what do we do? And you sort of alluded to this a moment ago when you talked about breathing room and spaces to rest and be nurtured. So you wrote this piece called The Room Where It Happens. Say a little bit about that for folks. Maybe you could sum up some of your more constructive angles on this.
When we got through the first piece and it went, as you said, the Christian equivalent of viral.
18 people.
Yeah. It was amazing, really. I mean, there was even one person under the age of 30. Incredible. It was like, okay, we got that out. We expressed just how painful this is and how frustrated we are, and it slapped us in the face with what we all were kind of feeling. But now what? Like, I need some hope. I need something I can do. So the second piece was meant to be a sort of like, okay, so if that's the situation, that they're not automatically coming back, what should we do? And, you know, I think that to sum it up, we have to pay attention. We have to listen to folks, really listen to what the longings are in their hearts. What is it that is filling their world with questions and this kind of existential angst that's sneaking into everyone's lives that no one really likes to make space for, but it's coming in whether you like it or not. And when they have these questions, to realize that we've already got the answer. And this is the super Christian cliche thing to say, but it's like, Jesus is the answer. You know, it's like, but no, really. But we haven't practiced articulating it. We are a discipleship illiterate church. The work of discipleship, the basic work of the church, is something that we've become somewhat illiterate as a whole about. And we've done a really great job of putting on programs and wowing people and giving people a space to hang out and connect and have friends. But making disciples, telling the story of Jesus, actually offering what we've discovered in Jesus to others is something that we need to practice at a little bit, because as we listen, as we hear the angst that's going on out there, we need to have something to offer. And quite frankly, they don't need a lot of the things that are in our toolbox, but what they really need is Jesus. But it really is the simple thing that if Jesus Christ has impacted your life, then you have a story to tell, and that story has power, and we need to find ways to get those stories told and to build disciples. Along with that, and this is also in the piece, is that we have to show this love and this peace that we have. And the simplest way is just to take care of each other, to really love each other in extravagant, generous ways, because that opens up the heart, that opens up the mind, that opens up people to being curious.
Yeah, I'm looking at your piece now, and what sticks out to me is listening, articulating, and inviting. You know, listening to people's pain, listening to their stories, listening to their life. Like Parker Palmer used to say, let your life speak. We need to listen to what people's lives are saying. And then, you know, we chuckle about it, but it's so true. And this is what really stood out to me was, how do we teach each other to articulate the benefits of following Jesus? You know, it sounds like such a bold strategy, and yet probably the only one that really matters. Then finally inviting people to a generosity of steadfast love. I think that's really well captured in that phrase. You know, and everything you're saying reminds me of something that my colleague Mark Ramsey has said so frequently, and our team talks about a lot, and that is the reality that the culture has picked clean the carcass of the church and only left Jesus. What you're describing is that the culture has actually provided all of this other stuff that we had tacked on, and they're frankly doing a better job of it. So you talk about the TED Talk and the reading groups and the entertainment, the music, and what we have to face is, oh, but generally speaking, the culture doesn't want to articulate the benefits of Jesus, to use your language. So what does that look like in the life of a ministry to, you know, frankly, to do less and go deeper, and to do less and create spaces of formation and nurture Have you figured out the magic formula for that?
Absolutely. And for $19.99, you can get yourself a copy of that magic formula.
Finally.
Oh, also $17 in shipping and handling. Well, this is what I've found, and this is what I'm still trying to figure out for my particular context. And I'm trying to help a lot of my clients navigate for their context. And that's that we have to provide a bold vision that goes against every metric that a church puts on a pastor. Because what every church wants out of a pastor is deliver a good sermon, visit us whenever we want you to or need you to or think we might think it's awesome if that would happen to. And then there's an administrative aspect that they want out of you. They want you to be a great administrator of staff and building. They want you to deliver that good message each week, and they want you to visit them. And if someone wants the cheap and easy way to be a beloved pastor, just put some good effort in on your sermon and take chocolate with you and visit people a lot, and they'll like you and they'll keep you and they'll probably even pay you more money. But very few times is there a church board that talks about how are we doing with disciple making. It's not one of the objectives that's talked about in terms of what a church is doing often. They'll talk about having more people show up. They'll talk about attendance. They'll talk about participation. But as long as you're bringing people in the door, they don't care what they're doing in the door. And that's the thing we've got to fight against. And so in each one of our contexts, how do we get our leadership? How do we get our people on board with the mission of disciple making and of the spiritual formation of those who are there? That is different from context to context. But I think that it begins with identifying that that's the reason why we're here. It's great that we're helping out in the community this way. It's great that we have a whiz-bang, awesome worship service. It's great that the youth program has the leading dodgeball team in the county. But what we need is to make some disciples and help everybody learn a little bit more about Jesus. If you look at people in your church and say, tell me about the impact that Jesus has had in your life, and you get the deer in headlights stare, you've got work to do.
Rob, in your experience, what have been the biggest obstacles you've run into with that sort of shift you're describing?
We've been talking a lot about vaccines and inoculation, and I think that what we've done is a great job of inoculating our people with a dead version of the Christian virus. And that's how you give somebody immunity. You give them a dead version of it, and their system learns to recognize that. And then when the real one comes along, it gets dismissed or it gets handled in a way that it doesn't cause any type of impact. That's what's happened with the gospel message. Wow. We've convinced people that really all it's about is be a good person and be friendly to one another. And that's all this is about. And so the biggest problem is that people have been taught what church should be, and it doesn't involve this ingredient of discipleship or of a relationship with Jesus. So I'm finding in my own context that we have to help people discover and articulate the impact of the faith on their lives. And you've got to step them through that process. When you find someone who has that, you have to put them up in front of the rest of the congregation and let them talk about it and give them time and put those folks in charge of the Bible studies that you're leading. Put those folks up front so that they can see that example, not to be exactly the same, but just to see what it can be like. That's, I think, the big thing that I've discovered is that putting forth examples of Christian faith that embraces relationship with Jesus Christ is going to have the greatest impact on making someone a bit more curious. But we are dealing with a population that has been well inoculated.
Yeah, and I've not heard it put that way before, but wow, that's really powerful. And also what you're saying too tracks really well with what we've been seeing, and that is the absolute dire necessity of basically help people through a process of narrating their faith somehow. You know, we talk about articulating the benefits of Jesus. There are models and ways to facilitate that type of work for people to say, well, this is what Jesus has meant in my life, and these are the people who have demonstrated that for me or who have given me that gift. People are actually capable of telling those types of stories. And then complementary to that is just the whole idea of modeling. When you say that, you make me think a lot about what Paul says. this idea of imitate me as I imitate Jesus. We should really take that to heart. What does it mean to kind of re-narrate the world in light of God's good news and what it's meant for us? And so I think that's a really helpful, practical way of thinking about that shift and overcoming some of those obstacles. I'm wondering, do you have a scripture or something you've been reading or something that's just kind of keeping you going, keeping you inspired?
Once again, I'm the guest full of cliche answers here, but I would say someone turned me on again to the 23rd Psalm. And just sitting in a familiar scripture and letting it work at me, letting it roll over my tongue and out of my mouth. I had the fortunate opportunity over the summer to be on the beach and to recite those words as the sun came up. And I will tell you that it gives me chills just talking about that now. And so I think that like finding familiar scripture and letting it dig deeper is a powerful thing that I've rediscovered.
Rob, thanks so much for the conversation.
Oh, well, thanks for having me here and appreciate the time.
Thank you for listening to the Ministry Collaborative Podcast,
a project of the Macedonian Ministry Foundation.
The Ministry Collaborative nurtures a national network of pastors and congregations committed to faithful,
creative,
and courageous engagement in their communities.
Our producer is Marthane Sanders.
To find out more about our work of cultivating leadership that makes a difference in congregations and communities,
visit our website
at www.ministrycollaborative.org.